Welcome to MILF Talk, Make Your Life Fabulous. I'm Sophie Venable, psychologist, life coach, mother of two, and author of MILF 101, Make Your Life Fabulous. Whether you're married with children, single, divorced, or somehow all of the above, I am talking to you about life, relationships, and of course, whenever possible, sex.
Well, I love talking about sex.
There you go.
Although I hope this one's not like the last one with that porn addiction guy and his wife.
It's going to be.
That was uncomfortable, huh?
Yes. Yeah. I'm joined by the very talented Hawaiian Todd Anderson, husband, father extraordinaire. Thank you for being here, Todd.
Oh, thank you very much.
I wish we could play the theme to Hawaii.
Me too.
Yes. So.
Me too. If only I was Hawaiian.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Yeah.
I know. You would tan better. That's for sure.
Yeah.
For those of you that don't know, he is ginger as ginger can be.
Yeah. I'm the whitest person alive. Yeah.
So I know you are addicted to your lovely wife, but my question for all would be, are you living with an addict of any kind? I was reading an article recently that was talking about like four absolutely insurmountable things to deal with in a marriage. And one of them was addiction. And I'm not sure entirely that I agree. And I don't know that my guests would agree either.
I guess it depends on the addict.
I hope not.
I hope not. So my guests today are a wonderful couple joining us again. He is the executive director of Alternatives Behavioral Health and lecturer at UCLA. And he's here with his beautiful, intelligent wife to discuss marriage and sex issues.
Yeah.
She is CEO and creator of Philosophies. That's with an IE, not a Y. Please welcome Sophie Jaffe and Dr. Adi Jaffe.
Hey!
So, you guys are still together after the last episode. That's good. Yes, that's good. It all worked out.
Got a little tense.
Got a little heavy.
MILF talk has broken a lot of marriages.
Yeah, it's
really weird.
I have not. I'm here to save them. Come on, people.
I think just by the fact, hey, babe, I'm going on MILF talk.
Right, and
that
that's
right
cool.
There has pretty much gotten
Why
me in
not?
Trouble.
Why not? Why not? Well, she is awfully MILFy.
Yeah,
I mean, you're a lucky, lucky man.
Absolutely. So, I think I made that point clear. That was
yes,
first
yes you did. You were like, I worked really hard to get her
podcast.
Back.
And
yes, like, just so you know, she's spectacular. So you guys have been very open and transparent with us and talked about your issues in your marriage with your sex addiction and then your discovery of this addiction and then even a further discovery of it being deeper than you thought. So you were both in a position to run or rebuild, right? And we talked about we talked a little bit about how to recognize it as an addiction or not, which is not black and white, of course. And you were talking to us about, Sophie was talking to us about sort of deciding the man you're dealing with, right? The partner that you're dealing with. Are they willing to get their ego out of the way and really do the hard work, right? So which one of you would like to start about just kind of the process and where you had to go
first? I can talk a
little
bit about what our process actually looked like. So as Sophie mentioned, there were the initial part of it was actually really uncomfortable. And what I mean by that is it's not as if I started seeing a therapist 3 times a week.
Wow.
We went to a couples group and Sophie did some of her own work. You know, my sense was if it's going to get this deep, let's just go as hard as I could. I was still finishing my PhD at UCLA. And so.
And you're found out now. So you might as well, right? You might as well just, it's probably the best thing that could happen.
To be honest,
all
that,
in.
That was part of my thing is we were looking at residential treatment. I just literally couldn't afford it. And so I did this outpatient treatment by our house. It seemed like I was in therapy every single day in one way or another because we were couples therapy, et cetera. But I figured let's go. I mean, I knew from my drug addiction that once you have the slate clean, it's much easier to just keep it clean than it is to kind of stay away from it and all of a sudden dirt starts accumulating. Mm-hmm. So I was going to therapy on a really, really regular basis. And part of what that included, as Sophie had mentioned, it's funny because we do the same thing with our clients, let's say, who want to learn how to drink responsibly. Because the thing about sex and when you struggle with it, the goal is not to stop having sex, right? It's not like if you struggle with cocaine and people go, well, just figure out how to not use it anymore.
Right.
And supposedly that's a solution. With sex, everybody understands that that's not a solution. I could argue about the other
one
as
food
well.
Food too, not the solution.
Yeah,
right. So
exactly.
You want to be able to.
Yeah.
Are you saying I should try cocaine?
Well, I already gave you the meth from before.
You gave me meth last time.
Yeah,
I don't. I haven't done coke either. Should
I just feel like I'm enabling you with this show, Todd. Like, are you going to ask all of my guests for drugs?
I'm in my experimental phase.
I love it. Does your wife know?
Yeah, she does.
Yeah. So there were a bunch of different things. So first of all, I had to start sitting down and identifying what are my triggers, what are the things that are risky for me, et cetera. No, but it was heavy involvement in porn since I was 12. I mean, mm-hmm. there were a lot of different things that were on the table. And so one of the things that our therapist really recommended was cleaning the slate for a month, I think, right? He had talked about a full month. And what that looked like was no exposure to any of those things. And so no sex, no masturbation, no porn, none of that kind of stuff for at least a month. I think maybe we went back to this a little bit later. But talk about uncomfortable, right? I mean, I want anybody listening right now imagining taking anything out of your life for 30 days. Coffee, if you drink alcohol, any of those sorts of things, right? That is uncomfortable by itself. But one of the things that was really good for us was it made us only focus on the work that we had to do. And so I did that for a few months, doing that intense level of a therapy. When I found out about my deepest layer of shame, we had started going to this couple support group that we actually go through to this day, and we really credit with our a lot of our recovery, which are other couples where at least one of the couple is identified as being a sex addict, and this sort of open place to talk where both partners sit in the same room and discuss what's going on.
I bet a lot of people don't even know that exists.
I didn't for the first 8 to 10 months that I was struggling with this. And to this day, one of the things that Sophie and I have to do on a pretty regular basis is check in and make sure that we are being intimate, because it gets away from you really, really easily. Mm-hmm. We're both very busy. We have two kids now. And so, you know, again, we do this meeting every Sunday, and it's one of those opportunities, but we don't do any of the therapy anymore. That's all done. Mm-hmm. But this couples group is something that we keep going to, because it's an opportunity to take an hour or two out of the week to mm-hmm. just focus on us and our relationship. And I think what I've learned over time is all those things that I was ashamed of were either needs or perceived needs that I felt like I've had since the age of 12, 11, 13 when I discovered sex. Mm-hmm. But, you know, nobody in my family had a sex talk. I joke around that. So I stole my dad's porn. That's how I got it.
Sure.
Well, my dad's sex talk was at 2 o'clock in the morning one day, waking me up in my room going, "Where is it?" I reach out under the mattress, pick out the porn that I'd stolen from him, giving it back to him. That was it. That was our sex talk for the rest of my life.
That's not a very good sex talk.
It didn't teach me much. And the irony is my dad was an OBGYN. I love my dad, rest in peace. But as an OBGYN, he could have literally sat me down. I could have had the golden ticket.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Like, this could have been the talk.
Yeah.
But I got none of that. And so I was ashamed. You know, porn was a thing you do behind a closed door. You lock yourself up. And there was so much shame ingrained in it. And I had no opportunity to talk about it. Because even with kids your age, there's this bravado that comes up.
Yeah.
And so now I get this opportunity with a partner to really dig through 20, 25 years of shame, which I say I get the opportunity to, because at the end of all of that, right, the process can be uncomfortable for 30 minutes, an hour at a time. But at the end of that, you get to live your life without all that shame that you've been carrying around for the last 25 years.
Right.
And that's given me a life that I didn't even know I could have, which is part of the reason Sophie and I feel good about doing this. It's not the most comfortable thing to talk about. But if it gets 1, 2, 3 other couples to say, you know, let me put down my guard and actually trust the person that I'm going to spend the rest of my life with knowing all these dark secrets about me. Mm-hmm. They can get a relationship they never even imagined when they got married.
Has that, doing that work and realizing that you have this sex addiction that's like a shame-based thing, has that changed your intimacy? Like, just sex for you? Is the shame gone or is it still there?
Look, I wouldn't go as far as saying it's gone.
Yeah.
But I would say I'm on an ongoing basis getting rid of more and more and more of it. And again, thankfully I found a partner who challenges me in that way. So not even just around sex, but generally in our relationship, mm-hmm. she challenges me to show up for the relationship on an ongoing basis.
Well, and Sophie, do you feel like you can really let your guard down and open your heart and be intimate during sex at this point?
Yeah.
But more than ever.
Yeah. And it's not, you know, like I said earlier, it's on the last podcast, it's not all one person ever. It's like two little kids that are fighting and mm-hmm. the kid's like, she did this to me. She pulled my hair. What did you do to cause it? It always takes two. There's something that I attracted from him. There's something about my sexuality that was damaged and I was in an abusive relationship before I was with him. And I brought my own stuff into the relationship. And that so affected us.
You owning, like you were saying before, how it was you had it filed as all his problem, right? And you weren't. What clicked for you that made you willing to go, oh, I got to own my part of this dance? Because it's always two people doing the dance, right?
Yeah, I think we just hit rock bottom that last time, and I had no other choice but to join in on the process. He was seeing a therapist that he would come home and report to me all the things they talked about, and I was like, this is so great, but I feel like such an outsider. Why am I on the outside? I want to be sitting in those talks. Like, I want to know every single detail. So he asked his therapist, and I was shocked that didn't come up to begin with. Like, why wouldn't you? And I guess it's just a confidentiality thing that the psychologist just was his psychologist. So I said, please ask. So he did. He asked the psychologist, can my wife come in? And so I started going to a few sessions, and then shortly thereafter, we were seeing him twice a week together, and it was the most powerful sessions. But it took a long time. It took a long time. And that was the thing that no matter how much work we were doing, I needed time to just pass.
I want to be clear about something because Sophie used this term rock bottom. And I think the only way you know that you had hit rock bottom before because you've risen past it. My rock bottom could have been after that first cheating episode. I could have done that soul searching, right? It could have been.
Yeah, but you still had all those secrets.
Sure. But what
that's
I'm saying
the problem.
Is,
but that was an opportunity. He had an opportunity.
Yeah, that's
to
true.
Reveal.
You could have revealed at that point.
Yeah, what I'm saying is.
But you were still holding it.
Yeah, and what
together,
I'm saying, we all get to make a choice along the way. And I'm not saying it's an easy choice, and I'm not saying you know when the appropriate time is or you can affect this some other way. But that level of shame could have not been enough for me, right? I could have walked away from that relationship, from this relationship, and then had to deal with that in some other way. And so I think you get to – at some point, you kind of get to ask, well, how much is enough, right? How much suffering am I going to put myself through? And you get to some extent, decide that this is my rock bottom, right? I'm deciding I've had enough of kind of getting beaten over the head with this fact.
And it's interesting, and I don't know – this is true or not, but it seems like you had chosen a partner at this point that you couldn't really point the finger at. You couldn't say, well, this whole pile of porn that you just found, it's not really a problem. I just need to like ditch you and go find somebody else that will deal with it or that will never ask me or, you know, do you know what I'm saying? Like at some point,
she was pretty close to walking away.
The two of you have like this work together that you were obviously meant to do, it seems.
The way that I look at it is in relationships, you attract different people at different times. There's no coincidences.
Right.
And the ones that you're the closest to, you're in that relationship for the maximum learning possible.
Right.
So he's been put on this planet for me, whatever that is, soulmate. I think we have lots of that.
Sure.
My mother, my father were chosen for me for the maximum learning for me in whatever area that is. And I can be the teacher. I can be the student at different points of our lives. But there's a reason that we stuck together and we found each other to begin with. And I have learned so much about myself through his healing. And that was part of it, was looking, what is it about me that's attracting this? What do I need to learn here?
But he was willing to heal.
And he was willing
Whereas
to
Whereas for some people, the learning is in the leaving, right?
Absolutely.
For some people, the learning is in the I actually am.
We could have done this separately.
Continually
but I would
taking
have,
the abuse.
But we both would have had to deal with whatever the core issues were later on.
Of
with
course.
Someone else.
They don't go away.
They don't go away.
Right.
Yeah.
Which is
but
part
he
of the
was willing
I,
to do the work.
Right.
And you were willing to
do stick
the
around.
Work. And well, that's what people, I think, to understand.
Yeah.
Part of the reason I stuck around was I think I knew this is something I have to deal with. So I'm either going to deal with it with the woman I've already been with for a couple of years and I'm about to have a baby with. Or I'm going to start this all over again and really have to struggle with this with somebody new who I'm now going to have to re-experience all this shame with. So this was almost the easier way out as – uncomfortable as it was, and I'm not saying that is a bad thing. I'm saying we have to really kind of think through this process a lot and kind of and say, okay, well, this is the situation I'm in. I can bitch and complain about how I got here, and you know, some people will want to listen, other people will walk away. But at the end of that story, I still have to figure out what I'm doing after this moment, and is that going to move me closer or farther away from my end goal? And if my end goal is going to be to keep Sophie around, then I've got to figure out what to do next. And to be perfectly honest, I could have blamed a lot on her. I mean, Sophie had mentioned coming back from an abusive relationship when we first met. Sophie was pretty uncomfortable with sex when we first met. And so that led to a lot of struggles long before I was outed in any way. And I could have, and I probably did at some points in our relationship, turn to that as an excuse.
Sure. Like,
she can't provide me with what I want, so I'm going to look somewhere else for it. And I know there are guys listening right now that have heard that excuse and believe it, right? Well, my wife can't give me what I want sexually, so I'll go look for it somewhere else. I'm helping the relationship. Well, one other way to help that is to have that conversation with your wife and say, look, this is kind of what I need sexually.
Right. How it doesn't mean you're going to get it.
Absolutely.
But I think might.
You put yourself out there.
Put yourself out there.
Can you be sexually addicted to your own wife?
I'm looking forward to that.
I hope so.
Just question. I'm asking questions.
I love it.
I think that's it's a good point. It's a matter of knowing when to tell the truth. For both parties, tell the truth and stand up for your needs versus being humble and softening. And it's that kind of.
Well, it sounds like a tricky balance, too, because you have to, you had to get your power.
Yep.
But at the same time, it sounds like you also had to admit to yourself where your shortcomings were in the relationship.
Sure.
And what you weren't doing.
What was I needing? What was he needing? Can I provide that ever? Can I even look at that?
Well, I wonder how much of this on a lesser scale, let's say, for a lot of couples, has to do with pathologizing the need for sexual variety or porn or even wanting to have sex more than once or twice a week. So because I would wonder, like, after everything you've been through, right, if your girlfriend comes to you and is like, my husband wants to have sex like 5 days a week. What's your response? Is it like, well, yeah, he's a guy? Or is it, you know, maybe he's an addict? Or, I mean, I guess I think that that's what so many people struggle with is the definition. And also, if men are already going to be shamed for wanting sex, then where do they file that?
They can't really win, right? Like,
no, they're screwed either way, or not screwed, when they want to be.
Yeah. Well, if the partner isn't having enough sex and he's not, you know, he's really busy and distracted and doing a lot of stuff. And so he's just tired when he gets home at 10:30 at night and has to get up at 5 or whatever it is, the circumstance, then the wife feels the shortcomings and is complaining about the other. So it's like, here's what I think. When you said that, my first thing that popped in my head was there is no perfect. There is no relationship definition of what it should look like. When we first got together, before I knew any of this, one of the first things he said, which was so poignant, was, There's no rule book here. We need to come up with our own rule book of what is right for both of us. So it's about getting on the same page and being like, this is my sex drive. I feel like actually I'd like to have sex 3 or 4 times a week. Well, you know, I'm more like once a week, but let's just meet in the middle. Or I'm more like every day, but I can totally like see other ways I can please you or please myself or whatever. It's having a conversation. It's having those difficult conversations that in the moment, like he said, are challenging and uncomfortable. But the minute you're finished with it, you feel so much better because you're on the same page. You're speaking the same language.
And half the time you're horny after having that conversation.
Right.
Just saying.
Because you let your guard down.
You're like, oh, I can actually tell you what I want and tell you who I am. Oh, and you want to make that happen? Wow, that feels so loving. Yeah. Oh, wow.
I'm attracted to you.
But I think there is like a genuine terror and insecurity that if you are honest about especially sexual things that you want.
Yeah.
Sweetheart, I'd really like you to dress up like a babysitter.
Yeah.
You know, a teenage babysitter. And
are you
all
saying that
come
to me right now? I don't know what you
mean.
Yeah,
sweetheart. Will you be a teen babysitter, fella? And I'll come. You can wait on the couch and I'll come home
but
and find
what?
You.
And once you, in theory, and even going into that conversation, it's difficult. But I can speak from experience. I was a frightened little lost bunny cat person.
A
thing.
Bunny cat.
Yeah. And I was in the corner
that's
and I was
sexy,
shaking and
I'm
cold.
Just saying.
Yeah. I have a new role playing. Scratch
did
that babysitter
wear
thing.
Ears? Can I get a visual on this?
In, in the most unsexy way, I was a bunny cat.
Okay.
And I was vulnerable and scared and I had been abused and I just was a mess. I would cry when we made love and I had no idea what was going on with my sexuality, and I had to also wipe the slate clean and learn what it meant to be a sexual person and own that and not be afraid of it. And
God, it's kind of so amazing that you guys ended up together. It's like total wound attraction.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
But, it, you know,
and we didn't know it at the time.
No.
Todd, you said this, and it's so right. It's as Sophie was saying, what it is important to talk about.
You mean that the bunny cat fantasy is better than the babysitter thing?
Obviously. I'm buying the costume.
You're totally right about that. Please tell me the teenager is 17 and a half, okay?
The part about entering these conversations, it is scary. I mean, it's scary in the same way that when I was 12 years old, you know, looking at porn with my friends, it was only the group of five friends who knew that we were looking at porn. Everybody outside was not allowed to know that secret, even though they were all doing the exact same thing in right. their own secretive
way. Right. So it's like built-in secret and shame, built-in already.
So much of it is shaming that literally, I mean, how crazy is it that talking to your future life partner about how often you want to have sex or how you like it is shaming, but what you like to eat or what movies you enjoy, that's totally normal conversation.
Right.
But that really intimate thing
your
you're supposed to be
partner.
Able to do all the
yeah.
time, that's like, well,
and
I don't
theoretically,
really want to talk
to the
my
one person that you're supposed to do it with.
So, what I was going to say, right. going back to the bunny cat, is I was that person starting out. And now I'm the person where I can own most of the time. Like, I was pretty much as bad as it can get. And now I'm at this point, and after everything we've been through, like then I was even, after all of that, it was like stripped away and stripped away, and I was so vulnerable. And now it's not that hard. It's so much easier to just speak up. And mm-hmm. you have to, again, you have to check in and get back on the same page. If a couple weeks go and we're not talking about it and I'm getting resentful because we're not having enough sex, or I feel unwanted, or I just need attention, mm-hmm. after we get back on the same page and I just say, I just need some attention. Let's just go out for like the movies. Let's just go. I just want to buy me flowers. Like, I just need something. Once you say it, or I want you to
dress up like a bunny rabbit.
No, right. I want you to tie me up and like use your, like they did in 50 Shades. Like, I just saw the movie and I want you to do that to me. Yeah. Whatever. Like, just. Oh,
just
talk
use,
about it.
Just
talk
just
about
use
it.
Better dialogue.
Yes. Yeah.
If you're going to do the 50
right,
Shades.
Right, just use better dialogue.
Just be better.
Well, I've been in that place, and my boyfriend knows me well enough now that there was one point a few weeks back where I just started to get kind of agitated. We hadn't seen each other in a while, and we would sort of like, I don't know, we'd like gone out to dinner with friends or something, and we're home, and we're sitting in the kitchen, and we're talking, and I'm starting to get irritated by everything. And he's like, honey, are you okay? And he's like, was there like a snag in the conversation somewhere? And I'm like, I don't know, let me think. And I'm like replaying the email. I'm like, no. And I'm like, boy, I'm just, you know what I need? I need to be naked mm-hmm. now, and I need to be near you, mm-hmm. and I need to be, like, that's it. Like, that's the only thing that's going to fix this yeah. is if we're together. Yeah. And it's like, all right, well, then let's go upstairs. Yeah. So yeah. it's just that you have to know yourself to know that I'm done. I literally said to him, I'm done talking.
Yeah. Like, you know, you just want to exist with
him. I need some kissing.
Well, I think that's what it's about, is if you are with someone that you trust. It comes down to trust.
Absolutely. That
if
you can be
that open
with. If
you're with someone that you trust, you can say anything. Because worst case, I say, no, that makes me uncomfortable, honey. I don't want to dress up like the babysitter. That makes me uncomfortable because it's a little triggering in this way and this way. But how would you like this? I'll be the massage therapist, and I'll walk in and knock on the door.
I love that one.
Right?
Yeah.
So that sounds great, too.
I love that one.
I'm not limited to
and that's the thing.
I'm taking notes.
And to me, there was a lot of fear concerning if I ask for needs, or if he asks for needs, maybe he won't be happy with anything else. It's a lot more simple. Like he said, I'm happy with himself. He moved on.
Yeah,
he
exactly. He moved
but
on.
To me, it's
that
like,
is the wonderful thing about men.
Yes.
They will move on.
It's fine. It's not about the babysitter.
Use
it's about
that to
adventure.
Your advantage.
We're pretty simple creatures.
Right?
I try to explain this to all women that I know.
Yes.
We end up being pretty simple.
Yeah, pretty simple.
It is.
Yeah.
It's not seen to be afraid of. It's like he'll be happy. And also sometimes it's not even about the sexual stuff. Maybe you were just looking for adventure with him, a shared experience, and maybe that's what he's looking for instead of you dressing up like something. Like, why don't we just go? We haven't gone on a trip in a while. Let's just buy tickets to Hawaii right now and go for the weekend or whatever it is. Let's go out and do something spontaneous and
adventurous.
Let's
go bowling.
Yeah, let's climb. Yeah. Let's go rock climbing.
No.
Who knows?
I'm not.
I'll end
do
up
that.
Staying home and having sex.
I'll do some karaoke though. Yeah,
but
I prefer sex to rock
right.
climbing.
The point is just to ask and not be afraid. Right. And the worst case scenario, she says no.
Well, I think it's beautiful that you've gotten to this place together, and pretty amazing. I would love for you to share, if you can. I don't know if you're prepared, but to share some of the resources that are out there for people that are dealing with this.
Sure. So, on the sort of self-help. In a self-help world, to be honest, there aren't that many resources for sex and love addiction. I mean, Sex, Love, Addiction Anonymous and SAA, which is Sex Addicts Anonymous, are kind of the two free self-help groups. There are a slew of treatment centers nowadays. I'm actually of the mind that unless you really need to get away because you need to kind of resolve immediate trauma, outpatient treatment is great. But as Sophie mentioned, find somebody who's an expert in this. This is not necessarily one of those things a lot of people are comfortable talking about, even within a therapeutic setting.
Oh, my gosh.
And so you need to find a therapist.
A lot of therapists don't want to talk about this.
And you need a therapist who's not going to be shocked by the stuff that you tell them, because that doesn't really help your shame all that much. And so you really want to – and the other thing is I would say dedicate yourself to this. So you can read some books on this. You know, Patrick Carnes is one of the guys who's done a good amount of work, but some people are really turned off by the kind of 12-step approach to it. Mm-hmm. I think finding somebody that you link up with, especially a therapeutic setting, we really love, like I actually said, our couple support group. And there are exercises available. I'd actually be totally down to put some of them online, maybe with your help, Sophie.
Great.
And it kind of intimacy establishing exercise. You know, one of the first things we had to do was when we weren't having sex, it's sort of like be naked in the same room together and touch each other in a non-sexual way, right? We get really so uncomfortable around being naked and sexuality and body that some of those things can be really, really helpful. And we can maybe put some of these sort of couple check-in and some of those exercises up online somehow.
Great. I would love that. Yeah, we'll see if we can make that happen.
Cool.
So, okay, well, thank you so much for being here. Tell us where to find you, because you have your own website, right?
I do. Yes. I run and own a website called thephilosophy.com, where we have lots of healthy superfoods and cleanse kits and all kinds of lifestyle, yoga, all sorts of great things there. And I'm at Philosophy Mama on all social media. And I have a YouTube channel with lots of yoga and fitness and delicious recipes.
Fantastic. Will you share the links on my Facebook page?
Absolutely.
Okay. Yes. So we'll make sure that everybody can find you. And Hawaiian Todd, where do we find you?
You can find me at toddrobertanderson.com. You can go to filmpigs.com if you want to hear me make jokes about movies. As I said last time, I'll be on Hawaii 5-0 on April 24th. And You're the Worst is back this summer. And all this stuff going on. I spend most of my time on my farm. I'm raising bunny cats. So if you would like your own bunny cat, I can sell you one. They're purebred. They're really fun pets.
That's going to be the Halloween costume of 2015, I think.
The bunny cat.
Yeah, I love it. Well, please like the MILF Talk page if you'd be so kind. And if you're on iTunes or SoundCloud right now, please click subscribe. If you like me, subscribe to me. You can go to my website, makeyourlifefabulous.com, where you will not only find a free workbook, but now you will find a free mini book about divorce and handling your divorce consciously. You're welcome to download that. So you can also find my book, MILF 101, on Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com. And Dr. Adi, we can find you. All we have to do is just Google Adi Jaffe.
Yeah, I think that's and easy. Then Adi Jaffe is
Adi Jaffe bunny cat
lover.
Google lover.
I think that'll be on today.
That'll be on
starting today. Starting today, we're going to start a website dedicated to that.
Well, thank you both for being here and being so transparent and sharing this information, because I think that it could help a lot more people than we know.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for listening.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore, because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.